Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Meet the Candidates. I'm your host, Jonathan Grabowski. We are now in the general election season. We just jumped out of primary season here at MCTV's Meet the Candidates, and now we're getting into the general elections. And joining us today on the first episode of the second half of the season is Katie McBratton, who is running for State Senate. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So before we get into the issues and all these other topics, first off, who is Katie McBratton?
Well, I'm a pediatrician. I've been a pediatrician for about a decade. I'm a wife. I've been married for 10 years come September 20th, so that's coming up. And I have two adorable and hilarious children who are 6 years old and 8 years old, and so they just started public school in the first and third grade. I have two dogs who are ridiculous and a cat, so it's chaotic in my house. We live in Hingham, but I work in Scituate.
Okay, great. So talk to me about your community involvement. I know you've done health and science education. You're involved in your town Democratic town committee. Tell me about that.
So the health and science education thing is something that I started. I did a lot of talks at the South Shore Hospital for newborn talks. I got connected with the library. The library in Hingham is amazing. And so I did some family talks. And then I collaborated with a friend of mine. And we do a Saturday science for kids now. And we're expanding that. So we teach about women in science. And then we do experiments with it. And it's really a great time. And learning is had by all. So that's wonderful. Great.
So you're running as the Democratic nominee for the state senate seat for this district. So first off, why are you running? And why this seat?
So I get asked that a lot. I am running because I think our state house needs a new set of skills and a more progressive set of ideas. I am running for this seat because I want to really help a lot of people. I'm a pediatrician. I love helping people. And my theory is that if I'm going to put being a pediatrician on hold, I want to do it, help the maximum amount of people that I can help. And this seat will help me help the whole state. And that's what I want to do.
Where do you sit on the political spectrum? I know some people are saying, some people are labeled far right, some are far left, some are in the middle, you know, whatever. Where do you sit on the political spectrum?
So I'm a Democrat. I love being a Democrat. I actually went down and voted on the Democratic platform. I think our platform is amazing. And I really am supportive of its progressive ideas in this platform.
Okay. Let's try to fill in the blank here. And if you can name a political figure, that'd be great. If you like blank, you'll like Katie McBratton. Is there a political figure that, you know, someone you can relate to?
It's a tough one because they're really isn't any, there's very few physicians that run for office, and there's very much fewer female physicians that run for office. So I don't really have someone I can pull from very readily, but I will say Don Berwick is amazing. He's a pediatrician, and he was, yes, and he believes in single payer or universal healthcare system, which is what I believe in. So that would probably be the closest.
And we're gonna get to that in a few minutes. What's the role of a state senator? Let's do some civics 101. What is the role, in your words?
Government is how we take care of each other. Okay. And I think as a state senator, I should be taking care of you. And that's what I think a state senator should do and should be.
Before we get into all the issues, and we're going to talk about health care, education, et cetera, is there one issue that stands above all for you?
Yeah, health care.
Okay. All right.
Above and beyond.
Okay, so we're going to jump right into health care.
Yeah, let's do it.
You're in favor of a single-payer system.
Yes.
What do you think is wrong with the current system, and how would single-payer make healthcare more affordable, accessible, and fair?
How much time do you have to
you
talk
can go
about
as long
how
as you
long?
Want.
No. So there are so many things wrong with our healthcare system. Our healthcare system is a mess. I've been doing a lot of canvassing. Even before canvassing, I know that the healthcare system is a mess being in it. But just going door to door and talking to people, that's what I lead with. And everybody goes, yes, it is. So it is. Copays go up. Deductibles go up. The start of my career 10 years ago, healthcare is way different than it is right now. And it's unfortunately moving in the wrong direction at a very fast pace. And so people, families are struggling under how much they have to pay for healthcare. Businesses are struggling with how much they have to pay for healthcare. Mm-hmm. And that's a real big impetus as to why I'm doing this, is because I took an oath to help and heal people, and I can't sit in front of my families and watch them hurt and not try to do something about it. And that's what we need to do. We ultimately need to go to a more universal system. You know, there is going to be, of course, arguments on how we necessarily do this, but people have studied this for a very long period of time. This is not a new idea. And so it will work. And actually, it will work to be more fair for everybody, and will work to be cheaper for everybody, because the costs keep going up. And there are lots of ways that we can move towards a universal system that cuts costs and makes it more effective and affordable for everybody.
Okay. Related topic, question one. Mm-hmm. You're a physician. What's your thought on this ballot question?
First of all, I'm sad that it is a ballot question, because it is actually a very complicated issue. And I think this goes to the fact that our legislature is not listening to the people of our state, that the nurses have been going to them for years and asking them to please help, that they're feeling that the environment in hospitals, in some hospitals, is unsafe, and that we need to look at this and figure out a way to make things safer. And they hadn't listened, and so now it's going through as a ballot question, and it's complicated. And so I've been talking to a lot of people about this, and they want to know my viewpoint on it, and I believe in transparency in government, so yes, you will get my viewpoint on anything you want. And so ultimately, for me in this issue, it comes down to patient safety. Okay. And I wholeheartedly believe in safety. As a pediatrician, that's what I do.
Okay.
And so I do believe that this will make things safer. However, the big problem is that it will cost money, right? And so we have to figure out ways in which we can make things safer, but that other things don't become unsafe, that we're not cutting programs like some of the hospitals are saying that we may have to do, that we have to figure out a way to implement this in a way that works for everybody. And I do think there is a way to do that, which is another reason why we need to have a physician in our state house, because mm-hmm. I have worked with nurses, I know this environment, I have a good amount of experience in this, and I think that would be really helpful on this question.
A topic that's brought up on this program, if it's a state senate candidate, a state rep candidate, a selectman, is the opioid crisis.
Yeah.
That's something that's always a question and a topic. What are some steps we need to take to combat this? Is there one particular area that we need to focus on?
Addiction is really complicated. Mm-hmm. So I wish there was just one area that would fix it, but it's not. It's going to take a multi-pronged approach in order to work on it. Any addiction across the board. Opioid crisis is a big one, especially in this area. There's a lot of towns that have been hit by it, but we also have alcohol addiction kills in higher rates, actually. So addiction in general is something that we need to focus on. I think one of the ways that we can do this, one, we have to decrease the stigma attached to mental health and addiction. Two, we need to bring it back to physical health. You know, mental health got separated from physical health in our whole payment structure, and again, how healthcare is a mess. But it's all part of the same body, and we need to bring that all back together, which again is my plug again for a universal system, because then we can bring in mental health and physical health and dental and eye and all of it back together. So we need to work on encouraging people to, in the healthcare field, to get trained in medically managing opioid addiction. We need more providers in that field and more clinicians to help, and we need to encourage them to get the training to do that. So there's a lot of things that we can look at in hospitals and environments, and sometimes I launch into my talk about addiction is a disease, and mm-hmm. with diseases there can be many outcomes. One outcome is that we treat you and you don't ever have a problem with it again. And some outcomes in the disease is that we treat you, but you relapse and you go back and forth mm-hmm. and back and forth. And then sometimes, no matter what we do, we can't get you better, but we can make your quality of life better. And I think we need to start focusing again on that this is a disease, and how can we help all these different categories of people who go through this disease differently.
Great. So you've talked about Chapter 70 funds and how they're used. Why does the funding formula need to be reformed?
Because it's antiquated. It is 25 years old. Okay. And then lots of things have changed in that time. And so two of the things that we need to look at with the formula is our special education needs and our health care. So in part of that formula, there is the amount of money that they put in to fund health care for their employees, their teachers, and everything. Well, health care costs keep going up at an unfortunately astronomical rate. And so when it's only funded at 4% and it goes up 7 or 8% that year, they have to take funding from other parts of the school in order to pay for healthcare, because you have to pay for healthcare. So healthcare just kind of permeates everything,
right?
And so that we have to fix in order to fix that part of that equation. The other is that we need to, there is an increase in special education needs, and we need to fund our special education needs. And so again, that's where we need to adjust that equation so that we're funding it correctly.
What's your thoughts on testing that we do in education? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Do we do enough? Well, give me your thoughts.
I think we need, the MTA has called for a moratorium on high stakes testing, and I agree with that. I think that, yes, there is always a need to look at and see and make sure that every kid is meeting the standards that we would like them to meet. But I think we've taken it a little bit to the extreme now, and we need to look at more innovative ways to make sure that our kids are meeting the needs that they need to meet, but that we're not teaching to a test, and that we're not not enjoying school. We need to enjoy school, and we need to enjoy learning. Mm-hmm. And I think I worry that some of the time that's not happening.
Mm-hmm. I agree. College affordability is another thing. How do we keep our public universities affordable and make sure our community colleges are properly funded?
I think we need to look at why the costs are rising and how they're rising and where we can maybe adjust how we're funding for it. You know, is the administration cost rising? Is there a way that we could figure out to decrease administration costs when it comes to public universities and community education? And then, honestly, it comes down to funding it, right? We need to figure out ways to fund it. And I think that the, you know, quote-unquote millionaire's tax or the fair share amendment, even though it didn't make it on for a ballot question, I think was a really good idea, and we need to revisit that. And we need to look at how we can get funding to help invest in our kids, because that's what it is. It's an investment in our future. It's an investment in our businesses, because this is our workforce. We need an educated workforce in order to continue to prosper. So we need to, you know, show people that this is an investment and we should be investing in this.
Do you think the state has to promote the trade route of education stronger?
I do. I think there isn't, you know, one direct path in life.
Right.
I love diversity. I think it's amazing, right? And we somehow got on this track that there's only one way to go, is that you have to go to 4 years of college and that's it. But life takes twists and turns, and that's not the route for everybody, and not everybody should take that route. And so there's a lot of kids that should go into the trades, and we need the trades. Less kids are going to that. We need them. The opioid crisis has hit the trades really hard. And so I think encouraging the kids to do that. We also just need to give them the options. I think we're not even showing them that those are the options. And it's not to say that you go in the trades and then you can't take classes and become an English major. You can. You can do all sorts of things. And so I think it just kind of laying out to our students that there are always different things that you can do, and encourage that.
I want to jump to transportation. This is probably the easiest question you'll get the whole from now to November. How do we fix the T? And I say that jokingly.
Yeah. So you fund it. I mean, that's what it basically comes down to. It is, you know, it is how we get people places. Again, mm-hmm. I will stress the government is how we help and support each other, and this is a public good, right? It gets people to doctor's appointments, it gets kids to school, it gets workers to their jobs. And so we need to make sure that it runs on time and gets people to the places that it needs to go, and not just on time, that it runs. I mean, it breaks down so frequently. So first and foremost, it needs money. It's a machine, it breaks down, we need to change parts, we need to get it to run.
Okay. There's been talk about privatization of aspects of the T. Why do you feel that privatization efforts, you know, in operations is not the way to go?
I don't think it's the way to go when it comes to public transportation, because it's a public good. And the problem when you privatize a public good is that you have to be beholden to shareholders, and those shareholders are not the people necessarily. And so the money has to be siphoned off for profits for shareholders, and it's not being put directly back into the system. And this is the system where I think you have to keep having that money funneled back into the system to fix things, to make it move, to make it be efficient.
Do you think we need to improve our transportation infrastructure on the South Shore?
We do.
Okay.
Yes.
Is there certain things that you think are, you know, high priorities, or is it more of a general thought?
No, I mean, I think having it run and work is the big priority. There are too many times where it doesn't. And I know this. My husband takes the train into his work into Boston mm-hmm. all the time, and he's constantly sitting on the train because it's delayed or late or broken down. And we joke, you know, it did it a bunch of times this summer, and we joked that it was because of the snow, because that's always the reason, right?
So, right, exactly.
I mean, we just need to fund it, and we need to make it work.
Right. The district is made up of many coastal communities. There's a lot of different thoughts on what to do and how to handle coastal issues. I just wanted to get your thoughts on how do we kind of preserve our coastline infrastructure?
Yeah, I mean, coastal resiliency is a real big issue, right? And so I think there's, again, I wish problems could be solved with one easy thing, mm-hmm. but it's going to take multiple approaches to it. So there's the short-term approach, which is we put up the seawalls. The problem with the seawalls, while it helps directly around mm-hmm. it can, you know, kind of cause problems away from it. Mm-hmm. And it breaks down, and it takes a lot of money.
You've seen that.
Yeah. So I think we need to look at longer-term solutions. Long-term and then even longer. Long-term is we have to look at more natural ways. So they're adding more beach sand in Marshfield to the beaches and into the hole into the beaches. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's an interesting thing to look at those studies, because beach erosion, natural beaches are a way that we can help preserve some of the land. So adding to that and doing things more in a more natural way, mm-hmm. I think is a great thing to look at. And then even longer term is that we need to help our environment, right? We need to stop doing things that are hurting the environment. We need to not put in a compressor station mm-hmm. in Weymouth that will cause huge amounts of problems. We need to shut down Pilgrim in mm-hmm. a way that is not going to hurt the environment even more. But that's even longer term,
yeah.
right?
So, does the state spend enough on environmental programs?
No, I mean, I don't think they do. I think they need to prioritize it. Right.
Okay.
I think there are ways, like I was just mentioning, that you can help the environment by not spending money, like saying no to a compressor station. It doesn't cost us mm-hmm. anything to say no to it. We should not put it in, and then we won't increase the health burden, the environmental burden in that area and surrounding areas, and cause a horrible precedent that if they put that in, that they can put those in highly densely populated areas. So there are ways that we can help the environment by not doing things,
okay.
certain things. And then I think that there are ways that we can help the environment by of course, moving towards renewable energies
okay.
and encouraging that, which will also, it brings business. It, you know, it increases our workforce. It's a good thing to move this way.
Okay. South Shore Chamber of Commerce, a couple of years ago, I think it's 2-3 years now, did a 2030, you know, vision plan of what the South Shore is going to look like in 2030. One of the issues that came up was that they found that the South Shore is an aging population and it needs to attract younger people in business. Do you think that's accurate? And what do you think, if that's the case, what are some things that need to be done?
Yeah, no, I do think that's accurate. I think there's lots of ways to go about it. I think that one is that you need to, again, encourage transportation. People, young families, and the older population want to be around transportation that mm-hmm. works. They want to be in areas in which they can walk and engage in their community. So we need to look at places in which we can build. I think this is where you really need, this is very town specific. You need to work with the towns to figure out where the areas are that would be the best in order to build, to keep the environment, natural environment safe so that, again, you're working and not hurting the environment, but that you're putting it in a location that makes sense for that town. Okay.
Something a phrase I found on your website, which I found really interesting, was the term ghost zones.
Yeah.
What's a ghost zone?
We use that term in ways that areas that you think that should be buzzing and, you know, full of life aren't.
Okay.
And so you have people living there, but you don't have the businesses that you want, or that you had that, and then they're leaving.
Okay.
So that's how we were using the term.
Can you give me a specific area?
So one of the ones I worry about, I wouldn't know if I'd necessarily label is a ghost zone yet, but is
an
Union
area you have
Point,
concern about,
right?
Okay.
So Union Point is amazing in Weymouth, and they're building it up, and it could be this fabulous thing. Right now, they just have a bunch of residents there, but they don't have any of the commercial mm-hmm. buildings there. And so the residents are very concerned that they live in this area that they don't have a grocery store to go to right now. And so it's tough, because if we don't do that soon enough, then people mm-hmm. are going to start leaving, and then you're going to be stuck with this property that wasn't what it was supposed to be, right?
Something that comes up in state and federal topics is veterans issues.
Yeah.
What are some improvements we need to make to veteran services in the state?
So I come from a family of veterans, and so my dad is a Vietnam vet, and my two grandfathers are World War II vets.
Great.
And so it's something that's near and dear to my heart. We need to, one, deal with the homelessness population. Mm-hmm. It's a shame that affordable housing is a problem around the board for so many people, mm-hmm. But definitely it is a problem for people who have signed up and have given their all to our country and they have nowhere to live. The same goes for finding a job. We have a lot of veterans who have a lot of skills, but we need to make sure that their skills can be translated into jobs here. And we need to work on making sure that they can have a job, because those are some really important things, and they're rights. Healthcare is a right, you know, and I think a good quality of life involves working and having a place to live.
Yeah. We've gone through all these issues. We always try to end the show with some fun questions.
Yeah.
So what's one thing about you that people may find interesting, you know, fun fact sort of thing?
I make elaborate birthday cakes for my kids, and Halloween is my favorite holiday. And I make all my family dress up in the same kind of type costume.
So it's a theme to...
So we're going to be Harry Potter this year.
That's
it's
great.
Very exciting.
If we were to steal your iPhone, your iPod, what music would we find on it?
Well, I just had an amazing concert, so this is my shout-out. Eddie Japan and Kingsley Flood are on my iPhone. They're amazing bands, so check them out.
Okay.
They're local, and you can get them on Spotify and all that.
If someone wants to find out more about you, where can they go?
They can go to my website, so Vote McBrine, VoteMcBrine.com. They can go to Facebook at Vote McBrine. They can go to Twitter at Katie McBrine, and they can go to Instagram at Vote McBrine. So we have all the social media stuff.
Okay. And last question today is, why are you the best candidate for this position?
Because I care a lot. Because I bring some experience and some skills that the State House doesn't have and sorely needs, and we need to work on helping people, and I really want to help people.
Great. Well, I want to wish you the best of luck, and I want to thank you for joining us on the show today.
Thank you very much. It was great meeting you.
Absolutely. And that's all the time we have for Meet the Candidates. Until next time, make it a great day.